You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 565, a spooky Halloween episode and a big episode to boot. Let's roll. There's no time to waste. Let's go.
My fire burning bright, haunted faces in the night.
This is the Punk News Podcast. First of all, we are here with M. Moore. Are you ready for the Halloween season? What are you doing for Halloween and what are you dressing up as?
I am excited for Halloween. I'm dressing up as Freddy Krueger, kind of. So, like, it's like I'm a soul from Freddy's chest, but I've become Freddy Krueger. And I've been listening to a lot of Bauhaus and Typo Negative.
Amazing.
I approve of Freddy Krueger. I definitely approve of Bauhaus and Typo Negative. So complex choices. But Hallie, what are you doing for Halloween and what are you dressing up as?
All right. So if I'm dressing up as anything, I might not dress up as anything, but I have a one of those blow up costumes with the fan inside where I'm BB-8 from Star Wars. And it's like pretty amazing. And everywhere I go, like kids lose their damn minds and like chase me down the street and stuff. It's like super fun. So if I dress up, I'll pull out my BB-8 costume. But I do have to say, for this being a Halloween episode, it is so sad to me that this is not a video podcast, because I am in our home office, which my husband has gone to town decorating almost our entire house for Halloween. I can barely see because he's replaced the light bulb in here with a red light bulb. There is a sun, there is a like a plastic thing over the window that, like, to people passing on the street, it says help, and it looks like there's like bloody handprints. And it's just and also, like, he has a thing outside that's projecting like witches flying onto the house. So, like, also just like coming through the window, it's really insane where I am right now is what I'm trying to say. There's like, I'm glowing red. There's flashing lights all over me and it says help above my head with bloody handprints. So that's just the visual to go with this episode.
That sounds like an awesome
shocked.
Halloween house.
I've stunned you. You don't even know how
awesome.
To
awesome.
That's rad. Listen, people, decorate your house for Halloween. It's a good time all around. You know what I mean? And it's over like 3,000 years old or something. What other holidays are like 3,000 years old? That's what I want to know. Aside from
now,
Halloween.
I have to say I'm so bummed that I'm not going to fest, because I was positive that I was going to fest this year. And I am not going to fest because my husband is performing at fest. So he doesn't have a choice. He has to go. And one of us has to stay home with our unvaccinated child. So here I am. Home, staying home, not going to fest. John, are you doing anything good for Halloween?
I am flying out to LA to see Danzig sing Danzig Does Elvis.
Oh,
so I will be out in
so great.
After being in LA for the first time about a month ago, I'm going out again for less than 24 hours. So we'll see how that goes. So I'm psyched. I'm psyched, man. Maybe it'll be the last Danzig show ever. It's certainly going to be the last Danzig Sings Elvis show ever. So I'm psyched. Listen, it's going to be cool. All right. So first of all, we got to hit the big news. Listen, people, Summer Soiree 5, the fifth year in a row, has been announced. And not only is it Summer Soiree 5, it is the New Year's Eve Mega Bash. And who's playing? Colleen Green. Fresh off the heels of her brand new album, Cool, possibly her first show since the album came out, is co-headlining along with the Joe Jack Talcum Band. Not just Joe Jack Talcum, the Joe Jack Talcum Band. Three-piece, electric, it's going to be awesome. I don't know what he's going to do, but every single time I've seen him, he's done a bunch of Dead Milkmen tracks and some solo stuff, and it's going to be rad. And also playing Crazy in the Brains, hot off the heels of their very cool music video and their brand new compilation, is going to be playing, and Philadelphia's own Froggy, Fred Osh, hot off the heels of their brand new video, 7-Eleven Nachos. We're going to be having a ball drop. We're going to be playing a game show in between the second and third band. We're going to be having goodie bags to everyone that comes. We're going to be giving away other cash and prizes. Well, not cash. We're going to be giving away other prizes. We're going to have slap bracelets, glow bracelets, cool hats, balloons. It's going to be a jam, people. Come on out to the New Year's Eve Mega Bash. Only $15. You find me a better New Year's Eve deal than that. You can't.
So, John, how are you doing that for $15 a ticket? Like, how are you actually? It must be. Who's paying for all these hat bracelets? It's got to just be you.
I will say, actually, one year what I did with the goodie bags is I wrote to a bunch of record labels. I was like, oh, if you want to send us some flyers or something, I'll just throw them in. And a bunch of labels sent me like a bunch of CDs and stuff. And then like some record labels sent me like $300 worth of CDs, you know. And I put them in the bags and people didn't really seem to care. And then I kind of felt indebted to the record label, so I'm not going to do that again. What I've been doing is – I mean, I go to the record store all the time. And so all year long, if I see a cool record for $1 or for 50 cents, I peel it off the shelf and I throw it in my goodie bag box. So I have got 175 cool records in the goodie bags for people that come to the show, which is worth the $15 admission alone. That's just the goodie bag, you know.
This is so cool. You're legit throwing such a cool party, and I'm so mad I'm not going to be at it. Well, that sounds so good.
There's going to be a show in the spring. I don't know who it's going to be. Maybe early summer. Hallie Bullet will be there at the spring. And I feel bad for throwing on new. Well, actually, I'm psyched to throw on new. I know Hallie Bullet was excited to come to the show, but weirdly, I guess, like, venues are straight booked through the new year, you know? And so it's at Philomoka in Philadelphia. And you can get tickets at eventbrite.com, my ticket servicing company of choice. But see, like, the only show they had was New Year's Eve, and the guy was kind of reserving it, and I've thrown some pretty cool shows there before. So he's like, well, you can have New Year's Eve if you want it, John. I'm like, hell yeah, I want New Year's Eve. And so I felt bad because I knew Hallie Bullet wouldn't be able to come. But listen, Hallie Bullet, we'll have other shows, and you'll come on down, and they will be a blast.
To feel bad for me. I'm just psyched for you. That sounds like actually just a totally amazing way to spend New Year's. Like, you're going to make a lot of people really happy.
I'm very much a whiner, and I'm very much overly sensitive, and sometimes I feel like no one cares about all this extra effort, but that's not true. I've had many, many people say, oh, I love coming to the shows, or oh, I love the goodie bag, or like when we did Sturgeon with Crazy in the Brains, people said that was the best Sturgeon performance they ever saw, which I might agree, until Punk Rock Bowling, where they were left over crack, was amazing. But like, people do what I want is I want all 175 people to pat me on the back on the way out and say, thanks, man, even though no one ever thanks the promoter ever, because no one ever knows who the promoter is, except for the fact that I make it a point to say, I'm the promoter, come thank me, you know. So like, honestly, like one third of the people thank me, which is honestly one third more than most promoters get. So I'm a big whiner. People do appreciate it, and it's a great time, and it's going to be a lot of fun, people, and you should all come. It's going to be, I mean, honestly, the bands are, Froggy is this new band from Philadelphia. It's kind of like punk meets Riot Girl meets grunge. They're like 17 and 18, and they are just, they are so much more mature and so much more artistic than I was at that age. It's crazy. Crazy in the Brains, they are in a new golden period. They are on fire. Joe Jack Talcum is the titan, and he's doing a rare usually Joe Jack solo is acoustic, which is very cool. But seeing Joe Jack Talcum electric, it's Dead Milkmen, but just the Joe Jack Talcum parts, which is pretty cool to see. I love the Dead Milkmen, and I love the Rodney stuff too, but it is cool to see it isolated. So you see, like, you know, Punk Rock Girl, Dean's Dream, Methodist Coloring Book, strictly Joe, and it's so rad. And then Colleen Green, maybe her first show since the album came out. She's got a slightly new style, which I am digging, and it's going to be rad, and it's going to be cool, and we're going to have a giant ball drop inside the building, people. So come on out.
Listened to that Colleen Green stuff because you talked it up on the podcast, and that album is awesome. That album's great. Yeah.
And it's an album, like, the more you listen to it, the more you love. Like, it really is a great album. I'm so psyched she's playing. It's going to be rad. So listen, people, come on out. And I'm going to be talking about it for the next 2.5 months, so get used to it. Also, just very briefly, I said I got my copy of The Rolling Stones. This is literally no one cares about what I'm about to – like, no one, but I'm going to talk about it anyways. I got the deluxe 2-CD version of The Rolling Stones' Tattoo You. It's got three master Tattoo You on disc one and outtakes on disc two. As far as the remix disc one, like, Tattoo You is kind of like one of the best-sounding rock records ever. It's one of my ten favorite, like, rock records. So it is remixed. But the remix sounds exactly like the old mix just because it was perfect the first time around. So the guy's like, well, like, I think it's like an AV Club joke, an Onion joke. It's like Puff Daddy remixes Thriller and leaves it untouched or something like that. It's like it's Tattoo You. It sounds perfect. So it's fine. The bonus tracks are really cool in that it's finally got like an official version of Give Me the Beat or whatever. What's it called? Fade Away, or, you know, Give Me the Beat Where I Save My Soul, I Want to Get Lost, Drift Away. So it's got, after many years of that track being bootlegged, we've got the official version of that. There are some other bootlegs that have been around a while, but they've been cleaned up. And Mick being Mick is, when they put out the Exile on Main Street reissue, they said a lot of these outtakes are not finished. So we went in and finished them a couple of years ago. So it's kind of stuff recorded in 1971 and stuff recorded in like 2013 or whenever that reissue came out. They kind of stopped announcing that, I guess, for marketing reasons. So on some of the bonus tracks, like on one, Mick starts talking about eBay, even though it's supposed to be from 1981. I just wish they would say, there's no shame in that, but whatever. Anyways, that being said, the bonus tracks are cool. The original album sounds awesome. If you're a Rolling Stones maniac, you have to have it. If you don't have it yet, get the new version. If you're not a maniac and you're just a fan and you already have the remastered version of Tattoo You, you don't need it, but it's cool. So there. Let's read some mail. You can also use the podcast at punknews.org. And I realize I'm talking a lot, so I'm going to read the mail, and then I'll let Em and Hallie respond. But I'm going to be doing a lot of talking on this episode. But here's some mail. Oh, actually, we got some really cool mail this week. I'll read the short one first, and then I will read the long one. Here's the short one. This is from Florian. I guess he's from Germany. After listening to episode 564, I saw an article saying that RZA was sorry he sold the record, I guess the Wu-Tang record, to Martin Shkreli. How much of these hyperinflated prices, including music, NFTs, and concerts, are the fault of the artists themselves, like RZA? Is this the result that he set off, from Florian? What Florian's referring to is the Wu-Tang record. Wu-Tang made one copy, and RZA sold to Martin Shkreli. He bought it for $2 million. Then it was seized in a federal forfeiture, and then it was sold again to a bunch of NFT bros, if that's what you want to call them. And so Florian is asking, is the whole NFT culture the fault of artists or not?
I don't think so. I mean, right, you're in a weird position, because what are you going to say? Like, oh, you offered the most for this album that I was supposed to be basically giving to whoever offers me the most money, but I don't like you, so I'm not going to sell it to you. So I'm going to sell it for less. And then you're just kind of choosing who you sell it to. I mean, I guess you could. It just sort of, then you get into another kind of like ethical gray area where, like, do you have to like someone in order to sell them something? I guess you could make that choice. It would have made for a much less interesting story, but yeah, I think we all would have liked to have seen someone, just a better person, have their hands on this record, right? We would have just liked to have seen this record in the hands of someone that, like, we don't despise, and now, like, in the hands of some entity that we don't even, evil entity that we don't really even understand exactly what it is. It would be nicer to feel like this was in the hands of, like, a true fan and a collector. But I don't know. Yeah, don't you guys feel like that gets a little weird? Like, if you're like, okay, I'm auctioning this off, but, like, oh, but not to you, not to you, because I don't like you. I guess you could do that. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, I would say, I don't think the hyperinflation of NFTs is the fault of artists. To the contrary, as with art, as it always with art, is you know, investor bros, you know, which are the worst of the worst, saw an opportunity to exploit things for their own profit and completely screw the artist in the long run. And I think that's exactly what happened again. But with regards to the Wu-Tang thing, is honestly, I do think RZA played it very poorly. I think, you know, Shkreli is so odious. You know, it's like, you know, if Hitler came along and went to buy it for $2 million, would you sell it to Hitler? And not that Shkreli's as bad as Hitler, but I mean, he did hold people's with AIDS lives for ransom, literally. That's pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, he's awful. You know? He's truly despicable. Yeah.
So he could say, "No, I'm not going to sell it to you." You know what I mean? And they could have put that clause in the auction agreement that if RZA finds you morally repugnant, he can refuse the right to sell it to you. I mean, what if a KKK guy bought it? You know, would he refuse to sell it to him? Probably, I would think, you know, or maybe not, which doesn't speak too good for him. But however, RZA is kind of in somewhat of a bind with Shkreli because, well, Wu-Tang has some questionable lyrics. And so if they refuse to sell to Martin, Martin could hit him there. You know what I mean? Say, oh, well, they're not selling to me because of reason X. And then it could get totally ugly. So I don't know. It was a bad call on RZA. We all make bad calls. And I'm not a huge RZA fan. I mean, I like Ghostface a lot. I like ODB. I'm not a huge RZA fan. I think he's all right. But the other thing is, though, is every – you know, it is so – even though Martin Shkreli's in jail, he still kind of wins, and that's what's so frustrating about him, is he bought the record for $2 million. The FBI auctioned it for $4 million. Now, I'm sure the FBI takes a poundage fee, which means they don't deduct the whole $4 million from the civil – like. Shkreli was ordered to pay $7 million in penalties. That one Wu-Tang record wiped out almost half of it. Like everyone was laughing at him when he bought it for $2 million. He made a $2 million profit on it, and that record alone almost wiped out his debt to the FBI, well, to the federal government.
Yeah.
Which is so frustrating.
It's so crazy, yeah. You know?
So I don't know. Like I said last week, the world sucks. I don't know, man. It's like, you know. Meanwhile, you got some guy working down a local hardware store that's being shut down because Amazon decided to destroy him. You know, and then he's got no job. You know,
mm-hmm.
You know. Anyways, mm-hmm, yeah. Whatever. I don't know. And what if Am's like, Shkreli's a good guy. I, you know, Am, you have an opinion or
Shkreli can burn in hell.
There you go. That's your opinion.
Yeah.
This is from Nathaniel. This is a nice email. Hello, podcast. A warning. This is a long one. Firstly, I want to express how much I've been enjoying the new crew on your excellent show. I've been listening since the Tricky Ricky and Dynamite Adam White days, and while I've always enjoyed the show a great deal, the current lineup of John, Haley, M, and sometimes Sam is my favorite so far. Please keep up the great work. Secondly, a question for John. You have many times expressed your approval of Keith Moore's doing Circle Jerk reunions, and you love Flag, which is essentially a Black Flag reunion. Of course, we all want Off to continue to play and make great music. Holier Than Thou is real, real cool. But you've acknowledged Keith can do reunions while still working on new projects. But when it comes to Jesse Michaels and Op Ivy, you take the polar opposite stance, practically quoting Henry Rollins' opinion, which you have many times criticized, that we shouldn't be living in the past and should be listening to Michaels' fantastic current projects, as if we had to choose between one or the other. You are happy for Keith to collect a well-deserved paycheck, but seem to not want the same for Jesse. You, as a fan, we're elated to see Circle Jerks reunited. Why don't you want the same for Op Ivy fans? What's the difference? And then I'll answer that in a minute, but I'm going to read the rest of the letter. Lastly, I think Crazy in the Brain's cover of Punk Rocker is the epitome of what a cover can be. To me, a good cover demonstrates that a song can work well and sound good in a different way, in a different genre. A great cover demonstrates – okay, I'm going to read that sentence again. To me, a good cover demonstrates that a song can work well and sound good in a different genre. A great cover demonstrates how a different musical setting can affect and change the meaning of the lyrics, or at least how they are perceived by the listener. Crazy in the Brain's cover of this already incredible song brought tears to my eyes. I put my hand on my chest and shakily sang along to the chorus. After all these years, I'm still a proud punk rocker, one of the only labels I'm comfortable identifying with. Punk has been with me through all the best and worst times. I still love it with as much passion as when I first discovered it at the tender age of 10. The cover flooded my mind with memories of shows and travel and all the people I've met because of punk music. Long live punk rock, and well done, and thank you to Crazy the Brains. Apologies for the length of this email. I won't blame you if you don't read it on the show. Now I have to go wipe away all the tears and snot that came out of my face as I wrote that last paragraph. Cheers, Nathaniel.
I love it. And yeah, I'm in a total agreement with Nathaniel. That's like just, yeah, that's what you want to hear from a cover. You want to hear like the essence of the song, like served up for you the way you always liked it, but with just something really new going on. I agree that it was just, it was awesome. And what a great letter. And John, yeah, what a, wait, you were going to go back and talk about, you were going to go back and talk about Keith versus Jesse. Op Ivy. So, yeah.
Let me clarify my position. I am all for Jesse Michaels making money and were an Operation Ivy reunion to happen, I think Jesse would knock it out of the park. I don't know if the other guys would be able to knock it out of the park or some of them. Now, I will say that you know, everyone disagrees with me on this point. Everyone else wants an Operation Ivy reunion. And it's not that I don't want an Operation Ivy reunion. What I don't want is a bad Operation Ivy reunion, you know, because frankly, Jesse's track record is 100. You know, maybe Kamen Rider is 9 out of 10, but Op Ivy's 10 out of 10. Classics of Love is 10 out of 10. I would love for Jesse to get the money that hypothetically he would get for Operation Ivy reunion to get for Classics of Love. But I realize that's not going to happen. So I guess my fear is, what if it's bad? And if it's bad, it's not the end of the – and it's not going to be bad because of Jesse. It might be bad because of some other guys, you know. But maybe not, you know. I mean, go see – pretty much everyone on this podcast has seen Rancid, and most have probably seen current Rancid. So I don't know. I mean, my fear is that it would be bad. But I guess maybe I'll relax my position. If the only way Jesse can get tons of bank and if Jesse wants tons of bank is for an Op Ivy reunion, then I say do it. But then just do it right, and I'm sure Jesse would want to do it right. And actually, I think Armstrong would probably want to do it right too. You know, so I don't know. If it's good, I want to see it. If it's bad, I don't. I can't see the future. You know, I'm all for Jesse getting money.
I mean, I think it would be good just because, yeah, like a lot of these guys, like they've continued to play music. It's not like they've moved on and like done something totally different with their life and haven't been playing. You know what I mean? Like they can all still play. Like, why wouldn't it be great?
Well, I'll put all my cards on the table, because if you go see Rancid, it's sloppy. And Tim is an amazing artist, but he's kind of lazy on stage. Well, not lazy on stage, but like he's not. If you watch Rancid, Tim like will play like once every like seventh note. Lars is handling most of the guitar work, you know. And Tim's Tim's getting kind of kookier in his old age, and everyone knows it. Yeah. No one talks about it, but he's getting kind of weird, which isn't a bad thing in of itself. But really, for Operation Ivy, really needs to hammer it. And if they've got that, and also, well, I mean, this is definitely not out of school. Matt Freeman has got a chip on his shoulder. Everyone's scared to say, everyone knows it. Matt Freeman, I mean, Matt Freeman, the word is, and I've never spoken to him directly, is that he's got a chip on his shoulder, you know? And I don't know, but I mean, he can still play bass pretty good. So I guess that, what does it matter if he's got a chip on his shoulder? I guess it doesn't. He still is a good bass player.
Incredible. He's still he's just still insanely amazing.
So honestly, I'm putting all the heat here on Tim, and maybe I'm wrong. I've seen Rancid live. It's very enjoyable, but I saw Rancid at the not last punk rock ball, the one before that, and it was weird. It was cool to see Rancid, but like Lars was like, this, who remembers this one from 1994? That we did this one back in 1990. It felt like an oldies act, you know. Whereas I saw older bands, like I saw I'm trying to think who I saw at that punk rock ball. I saw Flipper. Well, actually, it's a terrible example. I saw Killing Joke, and it didn't feel like an oldies act. It was like, here's Killing Joke. They've been destroying it for the past 40 years, and they're still destroying. You know, they're not like, who remembers 1997? It's like, we're Killing Joke, and I'm Baz, and I'm Jazz Coleman, and I'm totally insane, and they literally had to find me in the desert for me to be here tonight. Let's go. You know, and so, you know, Operation Ivy had – The music is important, and it's very soulful and moving. I don't want Operation Ivy to be up there and be like, who remembers 1989? Yay! Like, even with the Misfits, the Misfits didn't feel like an oldies act. Like, the Misfits felt like, here's our reckoning, we're the Misfits, and it was awesome. And that's the fear. I mean, that's the fear. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not saying I'm definitely right. I'm saying that's how I feel. And if money wasn't a question, I would gamble on it not happening. But if they want money, and I'm all for them getting money, then I say do it.
All right. So you won't prohibit them. You're not going to say, I, Gentilly, I decree you may not.
here, Actually, here's what I just had a self-realization. Here's what it really is. I don't feel a hole in the universe that Operation Ivy isn't playing, because Classics of Love is playing and they're awesome. So I feel that it's a step backwards. I feel like it's an insult to Classics of Love, and it's an insult to Jesse Michaels. It's like, yeah, Jesse Michaels, you've been doing all this art for the past 30 years, but we want you to do what you were doing when you were 17, not what you're doing now. But what he's doing now is amazing. That's what it is. That's my trepidation.
All right. I mean, I'm going to go back to Nathaniel's point of, like, the, you know, Keith and Flag and off.
Yeah, true. Situation. It's hard to get around that.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying. It's a, you know, but it's also, I mean, I do hear what you're saying. I absolutely do. It's like, you just, yeah, we, like, the thing with Op Ivy is that there's this, there really is, it's just so easy to hold that band up on a pedestal, because there's just never been a bad release. There's never been anything to, like, stink it up. You know what I mean? Just, yeah. It's pristine in all of our memories, and it just gets to stay that way. And I totally get the instinct to be like, let's just leave it that way, you know? If you take your theory, like, to its most extreme, it would be like someone being like, well, I hope my favorite band never puts out an album again, because what if I don't like it as well as I like the album that I'm listening to right now? You know what I mean? Like, it's, that's, yeah, true. Like, a band could always do something sucky next, but it doesn't mean we don't want bands to keep doing shit, you know?
Yeah, I'm gonna have to think about this some more. It's true. So listen. All right, I won an Operation Ivy reunion. Hurrah!
We wore him down. Yes.
So listen. Starting this weekend and maybe going forward in the future, instead of just playing, like, random songs that we like, we might be playing songs that we talk about on the show, because it is a little weird to talk about a song and then not play it. The other option is to, like, play, like, 30 seconds of the song. But for me as a listener, that always kind of sounds weird. And also, I feel like it might break the momentum of the show. So I don't know. We're kind of mixing it up. So what we're going to be doing going forward, at least for right now, and we might change it in a week or two or three or four, is we're going to play, like, some songs that we either talked about or are going to talk about on that episode. So what we're going to do, first of all, is we're going to talk about this band in a little bit, but we're going to be playing Pussy Gillette's new song called Banana. Wait, what's that smell?
Oh, it's terrible.
Look.
Behold, boys and girls, 'tis I, the track keeper.
Wait, who?
I said 'tis I, the track keeper.
Who?
I said 'tis I, the track.
Who?
Oh, the track keeper. Listen, this is before your guys' time. This guy used to come introduce songs on the podcast like 7 years ago. He smells bad, and he would always, like, include these morbid puns in his, indeed, and now have returned after 7 years.
But where have you been?
You could say I've been underground, 6 feet underground. But really, the union strike has been resolved, and here I am to wreak havoc once more.
Wait. And so by wreaking havoc, you mean just introducing a song?
That's right. And this song is by Pussy Gillette. It's called Banana. And you could say it cuts close to the bone, or more fittingly, close to the boner.
Got a problem with you stealing my banana. And when I find you, I will show you the
Show you the hammer. I got a crunchy little scrap that I hold.
really sorry. You know, it's the track keeper. He smells bad. He's annoying. I don't know where. I mean, he hasn't been around for like 7 years. The long-term Punk News podcast will remember the track keeper. He's annoying. And hopefully it'll just go away if we ignore him or something. You know what I mean?
Well, I love that we're in three different locations, but we can all smell him.
Yeah, well,
like, just by thinking of him or just him talking, it just evokes the smell of him. Is that how it works?
Well, see, he like signed on to our Skype, and like I guess he's got Smello Skype too. So like, you know,
amazing. Yeah, I was wondering how he pulled that off.
I didn't know how he signed on. Like, I didn't invite him onto our Skype. He just signed on. So listen, let's just ignore him, and maybe he'll go away. But listen, here's something that I hope doesn't go away: Classics of Love. They're back. They played a house show in the L.A. area, and I will say I was considering flying out for this. But I'm like, well, you're flying out for Danzig in like 4 days. It's probably kind of weird to do that. And honestly, I think I'm addicted to flying to L.A. now, even though I don't love L.A. So anyways, Classic Love, they played a house show, and it was incredible by all accounts. I know someone that was there, and they said it was indeed incredible. And this is the first show that the new Classics of Love has played. The new Classic of Love, of course, is Jesse Michaels, Sharif Dumani, and Peter John Fontes. The old Classics of Love was Jesse Michaels and the Hard Girl. So I guess this was the debut live show of the new Classics of Love. Interestingly, they put out a digital EP called World of Burning Hate, which was 10 out of 10. Fantastic. I loved it. And there was supposed to be a physical release coming out on Asian Man Records. There hasn't been any word of that, but maybe it'll come along. However, after the house show, Jesse said that they're probably going to keep doing shows, which is awesome. And he also said they're probably going to change the name in deference to the old Hard Girls, even though when he formed the new Hard Girls, he got permission from the old guys, and they were cool with it. But I guess he feels weird, so he's going to change the name of the band to something else. I'm sure that Classics of Love is back, or whatever the new band is called. It's Jesse Michaels doing hardcore. I'm psyched. I would love to see a Classic of Love show. M, do you agree?
Yes, I agree. Please come to Canada. Just anywhere. I will find a way. I will trek through ice and snow. I will climb mountains. I will do whatever needs to be done. World of Burning Hate was awesome. It was my top EP of 2020. It was really good. The music, it fits so well. Like, his vocals and everything, everyone just sounds like nuts. It's awesome. I wonder what the name's going to be changed to, and like, I'm in favor of that. I think it's kind of cool. Like, maybe they're going to go in a different direction and have a bit more freedom, like, to experiment and stuff. So it's not like, oh, Classics of Love is putting out something, I expect it to sound this way, and then it sounds completely different. Maybe, you know, they're doing it for a bit more artistic freedom too, but anything that and I just want to make sure that they're like, everyone's well aware of the name change too, so it's not like, oh, this band used to be this band, but I lost track of them because I thought they just like stopped putting out music. So I'm all in favor of it. I think it'll be cool. Hallie, what do you think?
I hope they never play again, because what if their future shows are not as good as the LA house show?
Touché.
I'm just fucking with you, John. No, this seems very cool. What else is there to say? It seems awesome.
You know, honestly, I didn't mind Kim keeping the same name, because there is such power in the name. I guess he, like, and honestly, Classics of Love is such a perfect name for the band, because it's like Classics of Love. And the band is like so aggressive sounding and so wild. Anyways, it just goes to show you can do hardcore and age gracefully. And I'm super excited to see what the band does next. Speaking of a band that I'm super excited about, Surfboard has put out a new video. The video is for the song Happy Happy Halloween. They also just released a brand new album called Keep On Truckin'. And the video and the album are both produced by Linda Perry. The video was produced by Linda Perry, although this song is not on the album. As a side note, I've really been digging the new album by Surfboard, Keep On Truckin'. It is really good. I love the first Surfboard album. The new one is a bit more, I guess, what we call it, multifaceted. Maybe not quite as spastic and aggressive, but I guess you could argue the songwriting is stronger. Their first album was great. The second album is great. I think this band might be one. I mean, if they can make it to the third album, which a lot of bands can't, but I really hope they do, and they don't go like alt rock or indie rock and keep doing punk-ish type stuff, I really think this band might be one for the ages. Like, I love the brand new album. It's so good. The last song is amazing. And I think this video is fun. I think it's cool how she like she talks about Beetlejuice for like she'll be like Beetlejuice and pixie sticks. It's Halloween. Like it's funny and weird. It's weird and funny and not that serious, but kind of edgy and dangerous to a certain degree. I dig it. I love this band. Hallie Bolt, did you enjoy the video?
I did. I mean, this is like, it's musically, it's not like my favorite surfboard song, but like, it's so fun. It's such like a good, just, it's a great Halloween song, right? If you like Halloween, you're going to like this song. It's got like so many good Halloween references. I liked the musical references, especially because she like shouts out like Susie and the Banshees and Sisters of Mercy and like all these like kind of like more like gothy bands, and the drummers like drumming with like kind of like creepy doll arms or like severed arms or something. Like it's just the song and the video both just have a lot of like just funny, spooky Halloween bullshit that's like just thoroughly enjoyable. I liked it. Em, were you into this?
Yeah, I thought it was great. I love stuff like this where it's Halloween and it's just, it's fun and it's nice and it's not like, you know, we're going to make you shit your pants. It's we're going to have fun and we're going to dance. We're going to, you know, do everything. I loved it.
Wait, are there we're going to make you shit your pants Halloween songs that I've not been listening to? Go on.
I can't think of songs, but I can think of videos. But yeah, and all their costumes are really cool. Like I think the bassist is Bob Ross, and then yeah, Hallie, like what you said, the drummer's Leatherface, so he's drumming with like human limbs, and it's just, it's perfect. It's so good. It's so fun. And it's like, it's catchy as hell. Like it's been going through my head for like a good 3 days.
I really hope like the weird release of this album like didn't hurt the band. As we know now, it was like through some weird SoundCloud thing, and like the first album made a lot of noise and had a lot of press, and the second one they're like, we got a new album. I don't even know if they mentioned it on like their Facebook or not. And so like it was weird in that like there's not a physical version yet, and you would think that like the Aimless Sniffer second album, there was so much of a push behind that. And I thought this would have a similar push, but it's like it's out, and I don't feel like a lot of people know that it's out because it's not even on Bandcamp, and it's great. So I don't know. It was weird, you know.
Wait, just the yeah. Halloween song, or this second album?
The second album.
Yeah, got it. So. I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's so hard for me because now, like, really, thanks to you guys, I hear so much good music through the podcast and because you tell me. And so I don't always have like an objective perspective about like what other people are hearing about. But yeah, I trust you that you just don't feel like you hear everyone talking about this album in the way you thought that you would.
Yeah, like I'm looking at their Wikipedia. Their Wikipedia isn't even updated for this album. I mean, honestly, honestly, if you're a PR person or like, you should be doing that like right away. You should be updating the Discogs just so people can see that. You know, maybe they've got like bigger plans. I don't know, man. It's weird. Like, I hate for this band to lose the momentum, especially since the album is so good. So I don't know, man. Or maybe they're like another band that I know a fair amount about. And maybe they really are. You think because they're a band and they've had success, they've got everything put together, and deep down they really don't. So maybe it's that way too. I don't know, you know.
Or like maybe they just don't give a flying fuck about their Wikipedia page. You know what I mean? Maybe they're just kind of too cool for that. I don't know.
I just don't understand 2020. But here's something I really don't understand. Every Time I Die, I've put out a new video. It's called Thing with Feathers. And it's directed by Brandon Dermer. And the song features Andy Hull of Manchester Orchestra. And it's off the new album Radical out via Epitaph. And more. Did you enjoy Every Time I Die?
Yes. I've been listening to this album so much. It's so good. I love it so much. Okay. So I did a whole thing. With not a whole thing, but like a mild whole thing with the video. So
a like, semi whole thing.
A semi whole thing, yes. So if you watch to the end, it says in memory of Jacqueline Buckley, who was lead singer Keith Buckley's sister, and she passed away after battling Rett syndrome. So the whole like the video, the band set up on roof, and they're playing, and then this thing shows up, and Keith Buckley goes and, like, chases it. And at the end, it settles in his hand, and it's a black feather. And black feathers symbolize protection and safety. They're a good omen, and they signal the healing process, and that what you're going through will soon be completed for the better. And you'll let go of whatever is no longer serving you. And like other interpretations are somebody who is gone is watching over you and giving you protection and strength. So I thought that was a really interesting tie-in if that's what they were going for with the dedication and that. And then the whole album is like, it's very honest. It's very personal. It's very... like very much about like a healing process and moving through things and everything. So I thought the video is just beautiful with that, like the symbolism. The song is great. Like it's not, it's hard because all of the songs on the album are so good, and I didn't think I wasn't sure like going into it how it was going to be, but it was like everything is just like so good. And this, it's like it's slower and it's softer and it's clean, like folkly. Parts seem like really delicate, but there's still this heaviness. I thought it was a really good balance, and I thought Andy Hall, the inclusion of him was really interesting, and his voice and how it just like it blended so well with Keith Buckley's and with the instruments and everything. So yeah, I thought it was great. Hallie, what did you think?
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, the chorus is just monstrous. Like I was listening to the verse and I was like, oh, this is like good. This is fine. This is good music. And then that chorus hits and it just like knocks you out of your chair. It's just super, super catchy and like really powerful. And that really kind of like metally, but also really, really hooky guitar part in the chorus I was super into. I liked that this band, I mean, I don't know this. So the thing with feathers is from like that Emily Dickinson poem that says hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all. It's like one of my favorite quotes, and not to be corny, but it's like a quote that's gotten me through some like very, very hard times in my life. So I just connected with this also immediately because I liked that they used something from that poem, and I liked that poem, it made me feel like I had some connection to it because I was like, oh, I love that poem too. The video, like, I really liked it. I thought it was like a little too spot on because I was like, oh, you're saying like hope is the thing with feathers, and then in the video you're literally gonna like chase a feather around. And then I don't know, I kind of ended up to where you got. It was just like that final image of like, it's almost like, did you see it as what it's, he's chasing it the whole video, and once he actually just stops and is like still, then it actually like comes to him, you know, the feather just lands in his hand. And I thought there was like something really profound and beautiful and significant about that. Yeah. I don't know. You know, this isn't totally my style, but it entirely, entirely won me over. I thought it was really, really cool. John, what did you think?
Well, now I feel like a dick because I didn't know the whole background of this song. So I'm just going to – all I'll say is I thought that – I mean, I've never really listened to a whole lot of Every Time I Die. I thought they were a metalcore band, but I guess they're not now, which is fine. And I'll leave it at that. I feel like an ass now. I had a different – listen, here's something I like. Pussy Gillette. They've got a new video. It's for a song called Banana or Banana. It was shot on VHS, and they've got a new album coming out on November 19. A lot of commenters hated this, and that made me love it even more because I love that this kind of music is upsetting certain commenters. And I had what I thought about, what was really cool about this video is that like there kind of are no rules anymore, in that like this band is very pro women, pro feminist. But it's got the lead singer kind of like wearing a bikini and like chopping up bananas and smashing stuff. And so, you know, back in the 90s, it'd be sort of hard to position yourself as a feminist band and wearing a bikini. But now you kind of do whatever you want and still be feminist and still, you know, have a broader range of a message. I don't know if either of you guys disagree with me, but I think this band is cool. I think the song is cool, but how aggressive and how like almost abrasive it is compared to most other quote punk or pop punk that we have on the website. And I just thought this was rad and dangerous and edgy and weird, and I dug it.
Yeah, it was like I wasn't even sure, like, because I would put this in the category more of like, I mean, it's definitely like in a corner of punk, but this reminded me of more of like the scuzz rock.
Yeah,
stuff
yeah.
that I feel like I was hearing a lot of when I first started getting into punk, like in the 90s. I feel like a lot of the shows that I would go to on the Lower East Side and in the East Village were like, this was sort of like a lot of what was happening in the scene at that time sort of sounded like this. So it's never been like my favorite kind of punk, but I have a lot of nostalgia and attachment to this kind of music. So I did really like it. And I'm with you, John. I think there is something about her being in the bikini that she's just kind of owning it. She's just owning her body and what she looks like. And she does not care what anyone else thinks. And there's something super empowering about that. And yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. I mean, I understood. I don't see why commenters have to like go crazy saying like negative stuff. I don't know why you can't just watch something and just say like, oh, okay, well, that's that. This is for someone else. It's not for me. You know, well, I don't understand why people have. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I mean, you don't understand, or do you understand exactly why? Because I think we all understand exactly why.
Yes,
I feel like that. I feel like I bring this up every episode, but and I'm not gonna keep doing it. But like I feel like that vibe has increased over the past year and a half or so. Do you agree?
Well, let's see. How long have I been doing the podcast? Like two years, maybe more, 3 years?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think I didn't pay attention to the internet comments a lot at first, and so I feel like since I've been paying attention, it's sort of had that vibe. So I think you would have to tell me if did it not used to be like that.
Well, I guess part of it is there are more bands that are breaking out of the mold, you know what I mean? And there are more bands now than there were 3 or 4 years ago. We have to step back. It goes back to one of my core, I guess, points is, you know, people get mad at John or at Punk News. It's like, I thought this was Punk News. How come we're not covering more Orgcore? Well, Lawrence Arms aren't really doing stuff anymore. I mean, like, you know, Lawrence Arms, they don't really do that much stuff anymore. There's really not that much news to report on those bands. And of the new bands that are doing that, you know, they don't really have a fan base. Not that that's a prerequisite for getting covered on Punk News, because it's not. But, like, we're not just going to cover, like, retro bands all day every day that no one cares about. That's death, you know.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
Thanks to M, we've been covering a lot of this new wave of like freaked out punk that I dig. I don't love all of it, but I love some of it, you know. And so it's like, here's what punk is now. It's not what it was in 2005. I'm sorry, but punk in 2005 wasn't what it was in 1990. 1990 was street punk, you know. And so I feel as though, because we are covering more of these freaky deaky bands, or maybe they're not even freaky deaky, weird bands that don't fit into a category, you know, so I'll call it freaky deaky. Because we cover more of them, the people that want the comfort of Beardo Punk, they're not getting it, so they're getting upset. And we're covering more and more of these bands because these are the people that are pushing art forward. And so the old heads are getting more and more discomforted by that, and that's too bad for them.
Yeah, like they feel left behind or something. You know, almost sad. It's almost like a little sad.
But what annoys me is we do cover Hot Water Music. We do cover Lawrence Arms. But they only put out an album every 4 years, not every year. You know what I mean? Surfboard puts out a new single like every like 3 months. You know, Hot Water Music puts out a single every 4 years now, you know?
Yeah, I just feel like really like hippy dippy about this stuff, but I just feel like all music is worth a listen and a conversation, and if you don't like it, just move on with your life. But like, I think you're right, John, for the site to not embrace where punk is going would be death, and it wouldn't be punk news, it would be punk olds. You are covering what is happening in the genre right now. And this is the exciting stuff that's happening.
Well said. And more. What if Emma's like, I hated this?
I have an interesting story about how I found this. So the band's out of Austin, and I was on Instagram, and I was going through stories, and Pleasure Venom, who are also a punk band from Austin, are really good. You should go check them out. Shared this video on their story, and then Pussy Gillette was added to a show in Dallas on the Starcrawler Surfboard tour. So it's like everything's kind of connected.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. And then I checked it out and it was like, oh my God, this is awesome. Why is no one talking about this? People have to be talking about this. So I love the song. It, again, yeah, like it's weird and it's great and it's like, it's affecting and it's just, it, there's some fuzz, there's everything. It's just, it's so good. And the video is awesome. Yeah, like the lead singer is just hanging out with knives and she's wearing like a really cool purple bikini. And the best part of that is she's standing in front of fire and the two other people who are in the band are dressed as bananas, like doing like a two step behind her. And they're like squeezing what looks like lighter fluid on the fire. So it like goes up behind her every so often. And it looks so cool. There's also a dog wearing a banana hat in the video, which just adds to it. And in the description, the dog's name is Walter, which is just, it's so cute. And she has like a sledgehammer at certain points, and it's just great. I'm looking forward to the new album, and I will be listening to it.
It's so funny. I knew this band was from Austin before I even read that they were from Austin. Like I knew it was something about the vibe, and also just feel like the Austin punk and hardcore scene just has a ton of people of color in it in a way that I feel like a lot of the other scenes are still like really struggling with. And so there was just something about the vibe, the VHS, just like the sheer weirdness of it that I was like, this band has got to be from Austin.
Well, there you have it. A very Texas band. And let's play a song. We're going to play a band. We're going to play that Every Time I Die video just because Em and Sam liked it. So Every Time I Die. Don't you mean Every Time You Die? Out on Epitaph Records. That's a great title for a record label. Or should I say a record label?
Dude, what's up with you trying to make pun jokes and not being able to come up with any actual puns?
What's up with the puns? Why? I'm the track keeper.
Yeah, it seems like you're trying to distract yourself from something.
Distract myself? Don't you mean decapt myself?
Did you have a happy childhood?
It was good. It was fine.
Really? Did your parents give you the attention and love you craved?
What? Yes, they did.
Really?
Listen, my father, he was a traveling popsicle stick salesman. He did the best he could. And my mother had to keep the family together. It's not easy raising a family in Traxylvania.
Traxylvania? I thought you were the track keeper because you kept tracks.
I am.
And wait, so just by coincidence, you're also from a place called Traxylvania.
Yes, that's two tracks. They have nothing to do with each other. Listen, here's Every Time I Die.
Thank you. been mistaken. Pour over the papers, trying to solve your equation. But the truth is not enough. It's your fate.
We're back. Hallie, I think you might have hit something with the track keeper. I think you might be onto something there, you know. So
Riley, we're breaking it down, getting into his backstory.
Yes.
But listen, speaking of getting into the backstory, we're getting into Ska's backstory. We're actually not Ska's backstory, the future of Ska. Half Past Two released a video for Big Energy. It was directed by Ray Mystic. And it's off their upcoming album, out tomorrow, so today, the time you're listening to this, called Something Blue. I don't know. The album is called self-titled, and their EP was called Something Blue. And more, Ska. Is it here to stay, or what's the deal with Ska now? And should we stop talking about Ska? Or should we keep – or should we – on the internet, everybody loves Ska. Everyone is dancing and singing about Ska all the time. Do you feel that way? And more.
I think Ska is here to stay. I think it's like herpes. It'll flare up every so often, and then it'll just be, like, non-existent for a while. So I think right now we are in a golden age of Ska. And so far, like, a lot of the bands that I've heard and are Ska, I like. I think they're very good. I'll check out the album. I wasn't a big fan of the song. Like, it was neat because on this song anyway, they did classic rock meet ska, kind of. And the video was really cool. I liked the video, and it has a lot of, like, circus imagery, and there's old footage of trapeze artists and really unsafe-looking carnival rides and all this kind of stuff, and it looked really, really cool. So A plus for the visuals. But yeah, it makes me want to see like an old classic rock band or like hair metal band or something do ska, because here's ska kind of doing classic rock. So I want to see the other way just to see what it would be like. What do you guys think of Half Past Two?
John, what do you think?
Yeah, well, you know, you have this wonderful spiel about, you know, if you don't like it, then just move on for other people that do like it, you know. Anyway, I don't hate this. I think it's okay. I think it's fine. I think everyone's loving ska, and it's not a good look for me to say, no, this is stupid, you know. And this is not stupid. I don't think this is great. I think it's okay. I just feel, I mean, with the whole ska resurgence, I feel as though ska is doing the exact same Harry Carey it did in the 90s, in that they're anything that's remotely ska, they're saying, oh, this is great, this is great. And instead of kind of being honest with themselves, saying, this is great, this is good, this is not that good, they're celebrating everything to the point as where it's becoming overcrowded, obnoxious, and repetitive, and it will tear itself apart like it did in the 90s, thankfully. I love Catbite. I don't like a lot of the other ska bands. I think this band's okay. But on the other hand, it's like, well, what do I really – I guess I'm just being a miser. Like, what do I care if people are liking ska even if I think it's bad? I guess it's just in my face all the time. That's what it is. It's in my face all the time, and I'm kind of sick of it, frankly. And so, but what, I mean, if I'm playing, if I want to play this smart, if I play it poorly, I'll be like, Scott, stupid. You know, it's the same thing over and over, blah, blah, blah. Then I'll come off as the bad guy. But if I want to play this Machiavellian, I'll just step back and be like, Scott. And it will destroy itself again, like it does. So that's what I'm going to do. I think this band is fine. If they're having fun, that's cool. I will say that what's cool about this band and some of the others, like we talked about Pussy Gillette, is these are bands that are – what's interesting about Pussy Gillette is they're a band that's breaking out of older molds. This band is breaking out of older molds but within the ska framework, which is interesting. That being said, I don't love it, and I'm just going to have to step back and stop being a miserable Barney or whatever the phrase is. And just let Scott kill itself, and the strong will survive, namely Catbite, and the rest will die, and that's fine with me. Hallie Bullet, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. Yes, right on the heels of saying, like, I don't get when people just, like, shit on things. Like, I just thought this was terrible. Like, really terrible. No, I'm not trying to be cruel at all. And I'm sure they don't care. I'm sure lots of people like their music, and they probably don't really care whether I like it or not. But I'm with you, John. I just feel like if this is where the ska revival is at already, this thing is going to burn out like momentarily, because I don't know. Like, I feel like if this were a punk band, we wouldn't even be talking about this, because a punk band that was like doing something that was this generic, there are just too many other good bands for us to talk about. Like, we wouldn't waste our time. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm not trying to be mean. It's just, these are all just such regurgitated ideas. It's like, why? I mean, I guess if you just had never listened to any other good music that this is borrowing from, maybe this would seem exciting. But like, and it's just like a chorus that's like, ooh, like, let it go. It's just like the lyrics were terrible. It was one of those songs where you could like sing along the lyrics without even knowing the song, because you could just like predict what the most like obvious rhyme was going to be and just like kind of construct what the lyrics were going to be. And I don't know. I probably just sound like, I don't know. The video, Em, I love that you loved it, but it was just like, to me, it was like very, I don't know, like this circus aesthetic. It, to me, was just very Moulin Rouge, like Lady Marmalade, Christina Aguilera. Like, I had enough of it in 2001. I don't need to see it again. I guess if you're super young and you just didn't have you didn't get just totally like to your saturation limit with that kind of aesthetic, maybe it seems exciting for it to come back around. And maybe that's why ideas do come back around. They come back around for the people that weren't around for them the first time, you know? So yeah, maybe it's just not for me. That was a really long way of saying, I don't think this is good. I just don't think this is good music. I just don't, as a musician, I just don't think it's smart, and I don't think there's really anything good about it. So sorry. I didn't like it.
there you have it. I do think you mentioned that if it was a punk band, if this was like a boring pop punk band or a boring beardo punk band or boring street punk, we wouldn't even think about it.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
So,
but that's what I'm saying. Like, there's so little. I mean, there's not there's just not a lot of better ska for us to be talking about, right? Like, these are the people that are deciding to revive this movie. Listen, this is what I'm going to end by saying. I'm issuing a challenge. Can somebody bring ska back? But like, do just write something that's good and new and smart. Like, do it. Get to work, people. Get to work. You can do better than this.
Well, here's something that's old. The Units are releasing a Live at the Deaf Club 1979 live album on FDH Records. You say, John, who are the Units? The Units are an awesome first wave synth punk band. They act, their first 7-inch is, I think it's just called The Units, I think. And it's got 4 songs on it, and it was reissued by FDH Records, and it was killer. They put out an album after that, which was very, very good. And then the second album was shelved, which was pretty good. And the third album came out, and it was kind of more poppy. FDH Records is a Philadelphia record label, and the weird thing was I got into the Units through FDH Records before I was even back in Philadelphia. I mail ordered the Unit 7-inch when I was in California still, and I know the guy. FDA Records has been doing this kind of cool thing where they only make 100 of each record these days, and then either you get it or you don't get it. And so that's kind of cool, honestly. So it's enabled them to put out some rare stuff that might not have mass appeal, but has definite appeal to some people. And so the Def Club, of course, was a very short-running but very famous punk club in San Francisco. Dead Kennedys played some famous shows there. There's the famous Dead Kennedy Live album, Live at the Def Club. The Offs played a show there. One of the best punk compilations there is. It's called "Can You Hear Me Live at the Def Club," and it's like two tracks from like six bands playing at the Def Club, and it is fantastic. And I'm looking it up right now on Discogs. So, anyways, people should get this because the units are awesome. First wave synth. I would say that like about a year ago, or a year or 2 years ago, I started really getting the synth, and honestly, like. After you hit the best, like the Screamers are the best in the punk band. I think Units are the second bit. Like after you kind of like check out the best ones, the rest is good. But it's like I've kind of heard this before, so I don't know if diving super deep into synth punk pays off. But that being said, Units and Screamers, cream of the crop. I'm super excited. I ordered this already, and I'm super excited to get it. And more. The Units. What do you think?
I hadn't heard of them before. So, like, looked them up and read their Wikipedia and listened to some of their stuff, and I thought it was really good. And then I listened to the live album because it's up on Bandcamp. So I listened to that, and it was really good. It was really cool. I love live albums, and because you can, like, close your eyes and kind of imagine that you're there. So it was like you put it on, you know about the Def Club from all sorts, like reading all sorts of different stuff, and you hear it, and then you're just like transported, and you're in the room, and there's sweaty people everywhere, and it's just, it's so nice, and it's so interesting, and it's like you are listening to history, but then you're a part of it, you're bringing it into the modern era and reliving it, sort of living vicariously through it. That's what I was going for. So yeah, I like it. I think it's very good. Hallie, what do you think of the Units?
Yeah, I was with you, Em. I was like, how do I not know this? I really, really loved this track. I like didn't have time to listen to more, but this like really opened the door for me. I'm really excited to listen to more of this band. Sweet. So John, you already knew all this about this band. How did I miss this?
How did you miss the Units? Well, the Units are like one of these tragically overlooked, like honestly, a lot like in my experience, punk rock, the best of the best of the best are known. Black Flag, Circle Jerks. Any other band that Keith Morrison, the Black Flag, Circle Jerks, Dead Kennedys, Minor Threat, Misfits, Ramones, we all know about them, and they are kind of the cream of the cream of the crop, you know. And when you dig deeper, there's some really cool bands out there, but there are very few bands that are actually as good as the ones everybody knows about. In my experience, one notable exception is the Screamers. That Screamers Gaze X demo is amazing. The Units, if you ask me, are almost as good, and they're really good, but they never had appeal at all. In part, that's due to some of their own moves, but also they're kind of just too far ahead of themselves. But they're also, they along with the Screamers, kind of invented synth punk, and then the 80s kind of came along, and a lot of those bands very directly were influenced by the Screamers and the Units and decided made synth pop. And frankly, synth pop is easier to listen to, and that kind of, you know, cemented over all the synth punk bands because they're edgier. But the synth pop bands, you know, Dead or Alive, You Spin Me Right Round, you know, it's easier to listen to. And so that kind of washed away all the forebearers, if you will. That's my view on it, you know.
Well, I absolutely love this. I'm like super excited to know about this now.
And I should have added is if you buy the 7-inch from FDH Records, you get a live album, a whole live digital album with the 7-inch, which is cool, which is a different live album than this unreleased Live at the Def Club. So it's really cool that they've had a live album sitting in the vault for 40 years. And here it is. You know, that's great. You know, the compilation is called Can You Hear Me? Music from the Def Club. You can get it right now on Discogs for $4. Dead Kennedys Live, KGB Live, Offs Live, Pink Section Live, Tuxedo Moon Live, and The Mutants Live. One of the greatest punk comps ever, along with Rat Music for Rat People, Let Them Eat Jelly Beans, the best punk comp ever. And if you ask me, those are kind of like the three best ones ever. So, anyways. All right, let's see. I think we got one more story here. Green Day. Speaking of another live album, the Green Day are releasing a live album called the BBC Sessions. It's a live compilation recorded at the BBC, recorded in 1994, 1996, 1998, and 2001. It will be out on soon, December 10th, and it will be double CD, double vinyl, and single CD. Right now, the band's on tour, the Hella Mega Tour, and they're doing their album "Father of All Mother Effers," which is. Halle Bulip, Green Day, a divisive band even now in the punk community, although most punkers now do say they love Green Day. Do you love Green Day? And we've discussed it before, we're going to discuss it again. How does Billy Joe look like he's only about 26 for the past 30 years?
I mean, I think he's like maybe having a little work done, right? Or at least like injections or something, right? Like, I think we can all admit that. He's not. I mean, he's famous. I wouldn't be so outrageous to think he's getting Botox or he's doing something.
If you saw him up close, do you think he would look freaky or do you think he would look like fine?
I think he'd probably look a little freaky, honestly. I don't know. But I was never the biggest Green Day fan. I don't hate them, but I just was never like hugely, hugely into them. But 2,000 Light Years Away has always, hands down, been my favorite Green Day song. So I was incredibly excited to hear this live version. And I thought it was cool that this was the song that they were kind of like stepping out with this album. I thought this song, I was just honestly just so happy to be hearing it again. I like hadn't listened to it a while and I was like, it's still just as amazing as I remember it. Yeah, are you like, I can't remember, John, are you like hugely into Green Day?
No, I'm not a hater, but I'm definitely not a fan. It just doesn't speak to me. I've tried to like get into Dookie like several times and it's fine. It's just a little boring to me, honestly. I mean, When I Come Around is a cool song, but I don't want to hear it again after I hear it. I think they're fine. I will give them credit for making punk approachable, and some people will say that was a bad thing, although most people say that's a good thing. You know, before Green Day, punk was like scary guys or girls, but at the time mostly guys, like, I'm crazy, I'm going insane, I'll knife you. You know, or it was like crass. It's like, you know, I hate the government. You know, Margaret Thatcher trying to get you. Let's go bomb a police truck. You know, whereas Green Day's like, I'm a depressed teenager and I want to go out with a girl, but I can't. I'm Green Day. And so there's no wonder it was huge. You know what I mean? I'm not a hater, but I'm certainly not a fan. I would not go pay to see them.
But did you like this? Did you like this? The song in the video that they released first?
Yeah, it's all right. It's fine. It's
no, I feel like what was did I feel like for people of your generation that Green Day was like the first punk that a lot of people were hearing. I think part of the problem for me with Green Day was that I was already listening to punk. So there was this part of me that thought it was like a little corny, but I know for my brother who's 10 years younger, it was the first punk he was hearing and his mind was completely effing blown, which I totally understand. So I'm wondering, like, Em, where did Green Day fall for you in terms of like influence and if you were like liking it or not?
So Green Day was the first band that I really kind of connected with. So when I was younger,
Hallie, don't you want to feel like a bunch of dicks now?
No, because it's exactly what I thought she was going to say. And I think it's why Green Day is so huge for people. And I totally get it, you know? So no, I don't feel like a dick. Don't try to make me feel like a dick. I don't feel like a dick.
Fair enough. Em, do you think we're dicks?
No. Not at all. No.
So it's the first band you got into when you were getting into punk. Go ahead.
Oh, so yeah, the Green Day story. Okay, so when I was like really young, driving around, like we always had the radio on, and what I do is I would memorize all the lyrics and everything I could to every single song that ever came on the radio. So it's, you know, you hear a lot of the same stuff and it's really, some of it's really boring. And Boulevard of Broken Dreams came on when I was 5 and I memorized that song. Like I sang it to myself. My dad learned it on guitar. I I sang it in front of some old people once. It was fun.
Oh my God. Wait a minute, is there video?
No.
Oh, that's my heart just shattered. Not. No, like my heart just shattered into a million pieces that there's no video of that.
But yeah, so that was a really big deal. And then I was listening to them on and off, and I never really put them together with punk. And then when I was 13, I got started getting into punk and the Sex Pistols and everything with that. So they were the first band that were kind of truly my own. But Green Day would be the first exposure to something that wasn't classic rock, I guess. And it's really cool because Green Day is my mom's favorite band now. So it's just like I see them or I hear them and I think of her. It's really nice.
Sorry, but a five-year-old with her dad on guitar singing I walk alone. It's like the cutest thing I've ever freaking thought of. I love it. Sorry, John. Go ahead.
There's a cute story, so let's send it out with a cute song. Yeah. This is Green Day doing 2,000 light years away. Don't you mean 2,000 fright years? Go away! Dude, can you just tone it down like 90%? Me, tone it down? Why don't you tone it down, Mr. Anger Issue? At least I'm not addicted to puns. I can stop anytime I want, and I just don't hunt to. Why don't you stop saying any band that isn't exactly what you want to hear is not punk, real mature? Shut up. You don't even exist. You are just a figment of my imagination. Oh, please. If I was a figment of your imagination, how could I talk to Hallie and Em, and how could they hear me? You're not talking to them. They're reading a script that I gave to them. You think they're talking to you, but they're actually talking to me. The reason you haven't been around in 7 years isn't because you've been on a union strike, because I'm pretty sure ghouls don't even have union strikes. It's because I haven't thought of you in 7 years. Really? Really. Oh, geez. Like, wow. That's a heavy trip to lay on a guy. It really puts your life in perspective. Well, listen, I'm sorry, but this whole thing and this whole time, I thought I made something of myself. I thought I had done something, but it turns out I need to go for a walk. Listen, man, I get that it's like hard. I just need some time alone. I need to think about some things. I just don't know what to do now. Like, my whole life has been a sham, a joke. No, track keeper. I was only joking. You're not a figment of my imagination. You do exist. You were? Yeah. See, go ahead and try to talk to Hallie and Em. Here, take these scripts. So go ahead and talk to them, because it was just a trick, you know, trick or treat. I was just tricking you. Hallie and Em, do you all want to hear a ghoulishly great new song?
Yes, we do, Track Keeper.
Oh, wow. I'm so relieved. You really got me. I sure did. Well, boys and ghouls, this is the new track by Scream Day, 2,000 Fright Years Away.
She's 2,000 light years away. She knows I'm Malachi, never let go. Because she's 2,000 light years away. Years away. I sit outside and watch the sunrise. I got as far as I can. I can't see her.
witches, 2,000 light years away. She opened my leg, heads out, takes her, never let go. Cause she's 2,000 light years away. It's a way. She's 2,000.